Welcome to the Molding Private Practice Show, where we help healthcare practitioners in private practice keep true to their purpose and build a life of mastery by providing the knowledge, skills, and tools to bring their dreams to life. In this episode of the show, we speak to Simran Parekh about being a counseling psychologist and everything private practice management related. Simran Parekh, welcome to the show. So we're so glad to have you on board and talking about being a counseling psychologist in India and private practice and all of that great stuff. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Always our pleasure, and more especially because you are our first, you know, guest out of India, which, you know, we're very honored to have you on and talking about that. And I think, like we discussed in the Molding Health episode, I think mental health is such a big, you know, you're probably going to tell me don't say problem, but you know, it's a big thing that we talk about at the moment. And having people like yourself, like psychologists, is definitely a blessing to us as society. So always happy to speak to, you know, healthcare practitioners. But can you tell us in your own words, I mean, what does a counseling psychologist do?
Right. So a counseling psychologist, you know, let's start from the basic, has a bachelor's degree in psychology or related field, has a master's degree in either clinical psychology, counseling psychology, or psychology. And post that, for working as a therapist, psychologist, or a counseling psychologist, you do have enough qualifications, like up till master's. And you take talk therapy sessions for your clients. And you can, use different modalities that you've learned in your master's and bachelor's of therapy. But yes, do not prescribe any medications or do not give any diagnosis, because that's a major red flag for a counseling psychologist to do, because you are not, you do not have that qualification or the right, or it's not ethical to give any diagnosis. If you feel there's a requirement for giving a diagnosis, or if there's a condition that you see in the client, always refer it to a clinical psychologist or a psychiatrist. Other thing that nowadays people are doing is conducting psychometric testings, but that is also not ethically right for a therapist to do.
Do you have a concept of like a psychometrist in India, or would the testing normally be done by the psychiatrist?
The concept is very rare. I think I would say it's on a very ground zero level. But the testings are usually done by a clinical psychologist in India for now.
Okay, cool. Okay, that's good to know. My other question is, so do you know, I mean, especially in the Indian community, I suppose this happens a lot more. But when you're growing up, especially in these, you know, in these huge family gatherings, people always ask you, what do you want to do when you grow up? So did a young Simran say she wanted to be a counseling psychologist?
Of course not. So I always wanted to do something around the medical field, like being a doctor, because my mother comes from a medical background. She was a pathologist. So somehow it was like, no, you know, I want to also get into medical field, being a doctor. But I think I did take up science in my high school, but I think things didn't work out, and I'm here today doing somewhere similar in terms of medical field, not completely medical, but paramedical, we can call it.
Do you know the point when you decided that, Simran? What is the point that you decided actually, you know, being a psychologist is the path I want to follow?
See, as I said, I was doing my 11th and 12th in science. So I wasn't ideally from a psychology background in high school, but I did get my bachelor's in human development. So that is also an overall understanding from, birth to death, what the lifespan is all about, like cognitive functioning, like learning, and the experiences, bodily changes, and everything in details about a human being. So psychology was a subject there, which interested me, because I thought, like, you know, why does a person behave a certain way or act a certain way? That's interesting to know. And how can we modify it, being individuals ourselves? Like earlier, it was like we cannot change anybody, or we cannot, you know, tell them to do this or that. But this psychology brought me that, okay, we can, you know, understand what's going in the person's thoughts and feelings. Definitely, I wouldn't call it a mind reader, because the first question people ask is, can you read minds? I say, no, that's a big no.
Yeah. Do you find this as well? I'd love to hear your answer. But so my wife's a clinical psychologist. And it was so funny, because whenever we meet someone new, and you know, the typical question is, what do you do? I mean, like everyone asks that. And so when she would say what she does, and you can physically see the person take a step backwards, because they're like, okay, this person will kind of start, you know, reading my mind, or figuring out what I'm thinking, or something like that. Do you find that as well in a social setting?
I completely agree. As I, you know, mentioned that the first question is like, read my mind, or can you tell me what's going on in my mind? Can you read minds? Can you read faces? I'm like, I can't do any of that. What I can do is understand from your behavior or actions what you're doing. So when, as you said, that, you know, in a social setting, if someone is moving or taking a step back, you can understand from their actions or gestures that they are a bit uncomfortable, or maybe they feel that, what if she knows things about me? Like, is there hiding something or whatever? So that way, so they're taking a step back gives us a hint. But if they don't do that, probably won't understand anything from their face, or they can't read minds. So it does happen with me also, that people do say, okay, tell me something about myself, themselves. So I would say, without having a proper conversation, even in the first meeting, I cannot observe a lot of things.
I think the other thing that happens is it becomes a therapy session. So you're at a wedding, and the person is busy, because you're a psychologist, obviously you can solve all everyone's problems. So you're busy, you know, solving people's problems and having a therapy session. Do you find that happens as well?
Oh yeah, completely. This recently happened. Glad you brought that up. I had a wedding to attend last year only, and we were just chilling out, all of us, our cousins, and you know. And suddenly the topic came up that, oh, you're a psychologist, so, you know, help this person out, or help that person. So I'm like, I'm on vacation. I'm not helping anybody out right now.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing, like, of course, this is a joke, but until and unless the individual is ready to come to therapy, you can't do much.
That is true. Yeah. And yeah, and I think, you know, if we go back to our example that we used in the Molding Health episode around, you know, physical exercise, it's, you actually have to go to the gym and put in the work, or do the running. And it's not like you're just going to get, you know, the perfect physical shape. So I think it's the same with therapy. You can't just, like, you know, someone's just going to read your mind and make changes. You actually have to do the work to do it.
Yeah, I do tell that to my clients also, that, you know, it's a two-way process, because I can meet them every week for 45 minutes. But post that session, if they don't put in efforts in the homework or exercises that I give them to do, it's not going to work out, because they are not putting their end of effort. However harsh it may seem, but it's the fact that I can just do what I have the capability to, sitting at a distance. I can't go to the client's place and, you know, tell, or, you know, even message her or call her all the time to have an update about what she or he's doing, or whether they are doing the homework or not. So I always say, like, of course, once, if they've not done because of some, you know, emergency or they forgot, that's fine. But if it's a consistent thing that they don't do their homework, I do tell them that it's really important for yourself.
I think that's how they get the maximum benefit from the therapy sessions as well. Obviously, therapy is not, you know, I would say in most countries, it's not cheap. It's definitely seen as more luxury, although it should be a necessity. But if they don't put in the work, then they don't really get the full value of that investment that they're putting into it.
Yeah, but I would say in India, it's pretty nominal.
Okay. as in the fees or the
charges? Yes.
Okay. As in, people are happy with the cost of therapy?
I would say yes. At least the ones that I charge.
Okay. Obviously, that's really interesting because I find in South Africa as well as the UK, I mean, obviously it's normally expensive. And that's why, you know, health insurance is such a big factor as well. Because if you have health insurance, you know, you obviously get subsidized for it. But it's actually encouraging then in India if that's more, you know, acceptable in terms of the fees.
Yeah, because I see that, you know, I do get a lot of claims from inquiries from abroad because I have noticed from their understanding only that the charges there start at around, say, $60-$70. Dollars, definitely depending upon the country they are in.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel those are way too high charges in terms of, because you need to see a therapist consistently. So yes. I think the rate should be at least nominal, as well as, of course, see your benefit as well. Mm. But I prefer keeping it in a range where I am also happy and the client is also happy.
Okay. I suppose, I mean, like if, you know, one of the reasons for doing this is to introduce people to you and your private practice and what you do. And I think for anyone, you know, we'll obviously have the links on the show once we've done it, but they can go onto your website. Do you have your rates there as well?
No, I have kept it as please inquire or they can reach out because I am open to maybe a sliding scale.
Okay.
Because I understand about the financial instability also. So as I said, you know, I work with the clients according. My main motto is not, I would say, profit. I know it might not seem very nice, but I feel like, you know, I want to reach out to as many people as possible and help them in terms of their stress and, you know, the concerns that they're going through. I probably am a person who takes care of my heart and rather than head. But yeah, of course, money does matter. So that's why it's I'm not giving pro bono sessions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But in certain cases, I do make an exception. But mostly it's charged and it's basic, I would say.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because, I mean, all healthcare practitioners, I mean, it's, you know, it's a caring profession. So, you know, they normally do it because they care about people and they want, you know, like want to do better in society or better for society. But at the end of, at the same point, you know, like if you didn't, you know, you're working for yourself. So if you didn't earn any money in your private practice, you know, you pretty much don't have any money. So it's important that you get the financial part. I know every therapist hates this. I mean, they almost, just like how I said, you know, people record, you know, like take a step back. I think for every practitioner, as soon as you start mentioning money or how much they're going to charge, they do the same thing. They take one step backwards. And I find, although it's a needed discussion, you know, it's like, I think, and if you set your pricing right, you know, people respect your time and you as a person as well better. Because doctors don't have any issues in charging you, I think.
Yeah, I was coming to that as well, you know. Great that you mentioned that. Here, say, for example, I would say that, you know, if the bracket to see a physician is, say, ₹800 to 1,000, people are willing to go. And just sit for 15 minutes to share their concerns, get a prescription and come back. And they are satisfied enough. But if the therapist is charging the same and giving you 45 minutes, you have a lot of hesitation there. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I think it's an allied or paramedical, you know, profession issue across the board. Everyone has the same issues, you know. And, you know, we speak to all of them, speech therapists, you know, dietitians, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, psychologists, they all say the same things. And it's sad. And there's obviously something about our upbringing or our education system or, you know, how we get taught about this stuff. But there's something wrong in that thinking that, you know, you almost need to change it from the time you're little.
Yeah, but I'm hopeful because things are changing and the way the society is growing, I think everyone would need a therapist at some point. I am not, you know, seeing it from the perspective of increasing my practice or increasing that. But the things around us are happening so fast today. I see a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old feeling depressed. Today, the word depression is used so casually as if it's something like a common cold. I think maybe 4-5 years down the line, this field has a very bright future.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I think when we get to that, when we get to that stage where people feel comfortable enough to say, you know, I'm going to go see my psychologist now, and no one judges them, even in their heads, I think then, then we would be getting there. But I think it is there. I mean, I think it's positive. I mean, the last few years have been positive. I think even having this conversation, you know, spreading the word about what psychologists do, because I think there's still a huge percentage of people that still don't understand how a psychologist can help them. It's like the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you typically go speak to the elders in your family or your parents, and they magically have the solution. But no one would think to go and speak to like a specialist. I don't know if that's, you know, that's mainstream as well.
No, yes, I agree to that. I was going to say this only that, you know, why I mentioned about 4-5 years down the line, everybody would require a therapist, because we are still in that phase that we can, you know, either share our concerns with our friends and get a solution, or maybe share it with our family members and get a solution. And earlier times, that was possible. So there was more mental stability, because in happiness or in sadness, you had your closed ones together. But right now, we are moving towards a age or a society where people are more engrossed in what they want, what they want to achieve, and more into their technologies. Today, see, very frankly speaking, if I come and share my problem with you, you would just maybe, it's just an example, you might feel that, okay, she has more problems than me, so I feel better. So you will use my problem for you to feel better. You wouldn't maybe sympathize or help me out. You would just say, for the sake of being friends, that, okay, things will be fine and, you know, you'll feel good. But there's no one to support you as such.
On that point, though, Simran, can you explain in your words, what would be the difference between going and seeing a psychologist or, you know, having a really empathetic friend? You know, that typical saying, you know, a shoulder to cry on. So there's some friends that are like that, you know, like you can give them, you can talk to them about anything and they're supportive and all of that stuff. But why would you want to go and see a psychologist rather than that friend?
Great question. I would say a great friend is of great help, because when a psychologist is not physically present there, the friend would be that support system. So having a great support system is really needed. So now coming to your question, why to see a therapist is basically because there are limitations to what you can share with a friend, even if you are bestest of friends. Maybe there are certain deep-rooted family issues which you can't share with a friend, which you might feel that he or she might judge me. Or, you know, because see, some way or the other, we are also maintaining an ideal self or a personality or a reputation, I would say, even if it's with our best friend or a person we know from our childhood. I think you would agree with that.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So to, you know, maintain that personality or maintain that reputation, we wouldn't share our deep, dark secrets or issues with that person. But on the other hand, sharing it with a stranger makes us more comfortable, because we're aware, firstly, they're not going to spread this to anybody because they don't know everybody in our circle. Secondly, since it's a stranger, they are less likely to judge us because they don't know where we come from or, you know, what other situation is. And there are more chances of them understanding us better because starting from a scratch. But if you talk about the same concerns with your friends, they already have a preconceived notion about who you are, how you are, how you behave, how you act, how you say, how you talk. So this is the difference that comes in between seeing a friend and seeing a therapist. But I would say keeping both is really important, because when a therapist is not there at, say, for example, physically meeting you and crying for, a friend is always there.
Yeah. As you said that, I was actually just thinking, you know, that's one of the reasons most people say they don't want to see a therapist or a psychologist as well, is why would you, I mean, I'm just paraphrasing now, but, you know, people say, why would you tell all of your deep dark secrets, you know, to a stranger, you know, like, and you don't know this person, you know, from anyone. And why would you do that? You know, rather trust, you know, your own family who love you and care about you and all of that stuff. So I was just thinking about that. But as you said, I mean, you know, for me, a therapist is this unbiased approach, you know, like, to that. And they also offer you that space where they thinking about you unconditionally, as in, you know, and they have nothing to gain from, you know, from the advice that they give. So I think they, you know, they're in that perfect space to help people.
Yeah. Also, I would add on to this that you can not have major deep dark problems with your work. It's always related to something in your childhood, with your parents, with your family. Like, if you think from a larger perspective, of course you have certain issues with your work environment and workspace and confidence, but that is something that you can discuss with your family. But if you're seeing a therapist for your deep-rooted concerns, it always stems, most of the time, I wouldn't say always, mostly it stems from the environment that you've been brought up in. So going down to childhood. So of course you can't talk about your family with your family.
Yeah, that's true. I think there's very few mature people that can handle those type of conversations.
I would say zero.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I think there's probably zero. Yeah, no one likes that criticism. Yeah.
Correct. Because today you can't go and tell your mom that, you know, even if she's not made a great dish, if you say, you will hear maybe five more things. So it's better, like, you know, not to, I mean, of course, communication is best if you have that open communication with your family, jokes apart. It's great if you can communicate your issues, because right now we are coming to a space where, you know, the communication has become limited. Like, it's all assumption-based. I don't want to solve this issue because I know that person is thinking about this. I don't want to go and approach first. Why should I approach first? And their relationships go downhill.
Yeah. I think the other saying that comes to mind, Simran, is like, you can't change anyone else, but you can change you. You know, and I think that's that's another good way of, maybe, what do you think? It's because you can't change your, you know, you use the example of your mom. You can't change your mom. Like, she's not gonna, you know, possibly she can, you know, maybe, but you can definitely change you and how you react to that, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree to that. As I said earlier also, you know, you can change how you can look or differently, or perceive a situation differently. You can always maybe, you know, understand, okay, I have to get, I wouldn't say used to certain things, because it's really important to voice your opinions also. So basically just, you know, modifying to a level where both of you are satisfied.
Yeah, that's great. Coming back to the studying part, was it quite difficult, firstly, to get into the program, the master's program, to become a psychologist? And secondly, you know, like, once you were in the program, was it quite a difficult program to be in, or degree to be in?
I would say no, because that was something that interested me. So, I have been at the top of my class in my bachelor's. So I was the gold medalist. So it was easy to get into master's. Definitely the major concern was staying away from family, because I was doing master's course in a different city from mine. That was something that I faced difficulty in. But otherwise, I think it was quite good. There are few subjects, of course, you know, they do go above my head right now as well. But it was quite interesting, because it was more of practical. We had visits to psychiatric hospitals and more of practical exposure. So I always say, you know, rather than theory, we learn from seeing things like visually. If we are today's age and generation will learn more from a web series, from a movie, rather than reading a book. And I believe in that, because what you see stays with you rather than what you read, because at some point of time you are not focused in what you're reading. But if you're watching something that interests you, you will feel like, okay, let me see the next episode. So similarly, I think the practical exposure and the testings that we were learning during my master's was something that really interested me. And as I said, it was something that I was keen to working towards. So it was quite easy for me, I would say. It might not be for many people, but it was easy for me.
Okay. That's a really good story. Obviously, you can, like, you're quite a high achiever. So that makes sense. I mean, just to tell you what the differences are, but in South Africa, as well as in the UK, it seems, there's a limited number of spaces, you know, in each university. So normally it's like quite difficult for people to get into those programs, you know, if you want to be a speech therapist or, you know, a psychologist. So normally people struggle with that, that aspect. But yeah, I'm glad it wasn't in your case. And I'm glad that that process was great. And after getting your qualification, did you go straight into working or did you take a break?
Yeah, so I completed my graduation in 2019 and I was looking to apply for MPhil, which allows me to become a clinical psychologist. But unfortunately, we all know that COVID hit the same year. So I did not have the opportunity to apply to many colleges and for my MPhil higher studies. So I started to looking out for a job. And I initially, you know, worked with a nonprofit, volunteering myself to gain some practical experience and to bring my theory to practice. Say, for example, for about 6 to 8 months, I was with that organization. And post that, I started looking for paid opportunities. And since then, I would say I have not seen back. And now I do not wish to pursue MPhil because I think I'm well, you know, adjusted in this area.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I mean, I think unless you know, you really want to pursue that aspect, but I think there's enough work, you know, like, doesn't matter which, you know, psychology, you know, aspect you're dealing with, but, you know, counseling psychologists, in my experience, are as busy as clinical psychologists, you know, in South Africa or the UK, and I'm sure in India as well. So, yeah, I agree with, you know, the decision there. And going into private practice, was that an easy step to do or easy decision to make?
Not at all, because I'm still, I would say, struggling with my private practice since I have always been, you know, working both. I either work part-time in an organization and the rest of the hours I give to my private practice. So it's, I would say, just been 3.5 years that I have come into this field. So it's, I would say, just the start of my career. I wouldn't boast that I'm on my peak because there's a lot to learn and understand and in terms of increasing my private practice as well. So I would say it's, I'm in still that struggler and hustle mode. Where I'm trying to be on different podcasts like yours and trying to conduct workshops and webinars for both general population as well as mental health students and writing blogs and articles as well for awareness. But somehow it's been difficult to, you know, increase that private practice in India. And since it's already difficult in India, it becomes even more difficult abroad because there are more opportunities and people are more open to see therapists in their own city. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think that story is too different to, you know, many practitioners that we spoke to. I do know, though, with, you know, with, as I think out of all of the disciplines, you know, in the allied, you know, like space, psychologists are probably the easiest in order, you know, in terms of building up a private practice, because you don't need that many clients, you know, on a regular basis to be able to build up, you know, the private practice that you want. Have you found that there was anyone instrumental in terms of helping you? Because I normally find like practitioners normally have a guide, or they have like a supervisor, you know, that normally, you know, shows them a bit of the ropes and tells them, you know, you need to watch out for this or that. Have you found that?
I would say no, because I was like, I did have someone from my, you know, a mentor from my internship. And I still am in contact with that person. Is a clinical psychologist, and she always motivates me to pursue clinical psychology right now as well. But I do mention that now the boat has sailed and it's gone too far, so not happening. But yeah, that person has been a constant help whenever required. But apart from that, I would say I have come here on my own somehow or the other by, you know, building connections on LinkedIn, trying something on Instagram, or maybe, you know, of course, my peers have been of great help. So, yeah, it's peer, more like a peer support than a supervisor support, I would say.
Okay, that sounds good. We do have to start wrapping up soon, but in terms of becoming a counseling psychologist and going into private practice, is there something that you wish someone told you, you know, when you decided you were going to become a psychologist, and even when you decided you were going to go into private practice?
Yes, of course, a lot of things. So, you know, whenever someone now reaches out to me over LinkedIn or something, I directly connect to them, and I be very open that, you know, you can contact me whenever required, because I understand how difficult it is to build something from scratch, be it private practice or be it, you know, getting a job in this field. Because as it is, there's less number of clients, less number of awareness, leading to lack of position setup. So I feel that I do reach out to people and help them as much as possible. So the things that I would like that, you know, someone have should have told me were like, you know, it's not easy, it will take some time, but, you know, do be consistent with it, and maybe certain connections would have been of great help in this field. Because here I feel without connections to start your private practice is a bit difficult, because nobody trusts a new doctor. Even in physical field, like in terms of physical health, I mean, you wouldn't go to a fresher. You would, you know, prefer an experienced doctor. So, for example, 5 years, 10 years, a known or reputed doctor. Similarly, it's the same thing in our field. So if you have a supervisor, or if you have someone who can, you know, guide you through it or help you by just referring you one or two clients or how to start off in this field, would be something that if I had got, I would be really happy.
Okay, that's amazing. Yeah,
not happy now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think as you said, I mean, like, you know, private practice is not easy, and I mean, it is a challenge. But it has been done before, and I'm sure, you know, with the right direction and the right support around you, you're like, I think it will be great. And I mean, I think we connected on LinkedIn. So essentially your marketing is working. It just has to be to the right people. And, you know, like, you just have to have the numbers that you want in mind. But I love your story. I love, you know, like, everything, you know, I love these two podcasts, I mean, that we did. It sounds absolutely amazing. Is there anything that you thought I should have asked you around being a psychologist or about private practice that I didn't?
No, I think we've covered a lot. Probably if we do discuss, you know, this is an endless discussion. So I think for today, it's a good start.
Okay, that sounds amazing. And on that note again, Simran, thanks again for your time. Thanks for, you know, for sharing sharing your experience and your story with us. I really appreciate it, and hopefully it's a really good resource, you know, for anyone looking to be a psychologist or going into private practice in India or abroad.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening. As always, stay tuned and we'll speak to you in the next episode.